next committee to order, and we're going to take up Representative Reinhardt's bill. We don't have a quorum to move House File 3370, but we're going to start hearing it anyhow. Although they look like they're not sure their people are here. Representative Gardner's here if you want to wait. What would you like to do? Okay, we're going to take up Representative Gardner's bill first, I guess. And I think this is a public finance bonding submission from the Met Council. Representative Gardner, we don't have a quorum yet, but when we do, we'll move it. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. I've been before this committee before, usually with Mr. Shetnin, who's probably shepherding other things elsewhere, but this allows the Met Council to incur debt for capital expenditures for their capital improvement plan. And I have West Quaestra here from the Met Council who can explain a little bit more.
Welcome, Mr. Quaestra.
And this would be eventually in the omnibus tax bill. I think that's what we've done before. Right. Whichever omnibus tax bill that we will have.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, my name is West Quaestra from the Metropolitan Council. I work as the Chief Financial Officer for the Council. This is a request to authorize the Council to issue $34.6 million in debt. These are requests that we have to make to the legislature because our authority to issue debt must be authorized by the legislature. In saying that, this debt is not for any particular new project, but it's the ongoing debt that we typically issue at the Council. 80% of it is for rolling stock. Some of that rolling stock is for suburban transit providers. Other parts of the rolling stock is for Metro Mobility and also Met Transit. In terms of the impact on property taxes, this doesn't have a direct impact on whether we increase or decrease property taxes, but it has been the policy of the Council to limit increases to the property taxes for the last 6 years to 1% plus any expansion in the transit service area. So this request keeps us on that pattern of limiting increases to 1%. And I should add, because development and commercial and residential development over the last six-year period has been well over 1%, our actual tax impact on single-family resident has gone down over that period of time. So this is in keeping with the policy. We are required to get this authority through you so we can enter into contracts. This is not on the same timing as debt issuance because we issue debt at the time at which the costs are incurred. But, for example, in rolling stock, we have to contract for the manufacturing of rolling stock 2 years in advance, and we can't contract for the rolling stock until we have the authority to issue the debt.
Thank you. Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair and sir, how much debt does Minneapolis or Metropolitan Council now have on this particular program?
Mr. Quaestra.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, we have about $200 million of outstanding debt, $204 million of outstanding debt for the transit program.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, and if you did not have this, and I'm not necessarily against it, would property taxes decrease?
Mr. Quaestra.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, that could be the result. The Met Council could choose to levy to retire debt earlier, but it does have an impact on property taxes. There, in 2012, this current bonding request, for example, would have about an $8 million obligation added to property taxes. The reason our increase only goes up about 1% is because we're also retiring debt, and so the net of it is essentially about even. So this puts us on our standard program pattern.
Madam Chair, that was my next question. If you're retiring debt, is that same? Doesn't the amount that you have right now that you're levying for that pay for the new debt?
Do
you have a schedule of retiring debt that would retire $46 million or $34.6 million in the next couple of years?
Mr. Quaestra.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I believe that we are still required to come back after authority to issue new debt, if I understand the question. I don't believe we are able to carry forward previous debt that's been retired into our program.
No, Madam Chair, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about the payment of the debt. How much is being retired, and would the retirement debt kind of make up for this?
Oh.
My question.
Mr. Quaestra.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, we're retiring depending upon the year. Our retirement schedule ranges from the mid-30s to the lower 40s in millions of dollars of retirement. So we're asking for $34.6 million of debt. For example, in 2010, I believe we're retiring around $41 million of debt.
Okay. Madam Chair, then my other question is, first of all, how long is each bond for? Is it, because this is rolling stock, is it 20 years?
No. Mr. Weister, and there's a lot of different debt instruments that the Met Council uses.
Yeah.
And Mr. Shetland, do you want to join us? Or? Sure.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, while Judd is coming up, I'm told that the FTA guideline is 12 years for rolling stock. That's typically the lifespan of the rolling stock as well.
And then my very last question is, in the metropolitan area, there's a sales tax for transit. And why is that not used for payment of bonds on this? I mean, we can authorize it, but why is that not the source of payment of the bond?
Do you know the differences between this and
Madam Chair?
Mr. Shetland?
My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, and Representative Solberg. The quarter cent sales tax is levied by the counties, and these bonds are for our existing transit system, our regular route transit system, Metro Mobility, our Dial-A-Ride program, which is a function of the Metropolitan Council. That we use these funds in order to leverage federal funds. The CTIP dollars are for transitways and for transitway operating. What these dollars are used for are for our regular route bus service, our dial-a-ride. It's for the small capital purchases of our system. So it's bus shelters, it's small park and ride facilities, and fleet. Is basically really what it comes down to. So there are two really different pots of dollars, and the CTIB is not responsible for the small capital purchases and maintenance of our transit system. They are really put in place to expand the transitway system, which is the rail system and the bus rapid transit system here in the metropolitan area. And Madam Chair, members, I apologize for being late. There was a discussion on the central corridor over in the governor's office that I was asked to stay, so I'm sorry about that.
Representative Solberg, further?
That's okay.
Okay, and for members, I don't see Ms. Dalton here, but I think she's coming down. If you have more questions on that, I think Mr. Shetland covered it well. Just for the committee's remembering this, this only affects Metro residents. They are the only people who pay these taxes, and this item is separate from the other sales tax item that Representative Solberg raised, which again is only paid by Metro residents, and not all of the Metro pays that tax because a number of those county commissioners did not approve that tax. So some counties in the 7-county Metro are paying that additional sales tax. That's being flowed through counties for things. This item is what the Met Council brings through. I don't know if it's yearly or every 2 years. There's sort of standard stuff they're looking for to go in the public finance article, the tax bill. Other questions for Representative Gardner? We now have a quorum, so Representative Gardner moves House File 3779 for possible inclusion on this tax bill. Any other questions? Anyone from the public who'd like to testify for or against this bill? If not, we're going to lay it over for possible inclusion on this tax bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Reinert now moves House File 3370 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Reinert.
Glad I could help.
And Representative Reinert has an amendment. So Representative Reinert is moving H3370DE1 amendment to get it in the order he would like. Discussion of the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members, the bill that you have before you would be the first step in trying to put income tax reciprocity back in place between Minnesota and Wisconsin. To give you a brief history summary, the income tax reciprocity between Minnesota and Wisconsin was in place since 1967, and that agreement was ended this past year. And I'll let I've got Commissioner Ines with me, and he can talk about some of the backstory on why that decision was made. But as you can guess, being a Duluth representative, this is a big issue in Duluth and Superior. It's a big issue in the metropolitan area. It's a big issue in southeastern Minnesota, where we have Minnesotans working in Wisconsin and Wisconsinites working in Minnesota. So with the end of reciprocity, and I do want to, before the commissioner speaks, just acknowledge the goodwill and I think hard work that Commissioner Ines put in with myself, with Senator Salzman over on the Senate side. I think it's fair to say we probably would have taken the position that we didn't want reciprocity to end. But once it did, we immediately moved into what do we need to do to rectify three major issues that were sort of outstanding between Minnesota and Wisconsin. One of those was a nearly 23-month lag time between Wisconsin reimbursing Minnesota for our loss in taxes. The second one, I think, was more of a Wisconsin issue. We were charging Wisconsin 8% interest on that delayed payment. And then the third one was, and members, this is what this bill is here to address. The third one was a benchmark study. A study was done in the early 90s, 1990-1992-ish, that said, here are the cross-border workers. Here's who's working in the other state. Here's what they're paying. And that study was used as a benchmark to calculate who was losing money to whom, what payment would be made, and that sort of thing. And as you can imagine, Wisconsin is the sort of the net gainer in this reciprocity agreement because we have all the population centers on the Minnesota west side of the border and Wisconsinites come over, with the La Crosse area being a little bit of an exception. However, that study wasn't dynamic. It didn't keep pace with the changes that were occurring over the next 30 years. And so that was a major component of the discussions we had last summer, the discussions we had this fall, of both states saying, you know, we need to revisit this study. So when reciprocity was ended and we moved into how do we pick these pieces up and go forward again, a new study was sort of dominant in the conversation. We need to have good data that we can use. We also need to make a study that's going to be dynamic, something that can change with us as our state, the population of both states change. So the bill you have before you calls for this study. It basically says, let's make lemonade out of lemons. We don't have reciprocity anymore. So in tax year 2010, everyone's going to pay taxes where they should pay taxes based on their primary place of residence. So knowing that, we can take that information, we can put together a new study, and in our bill, we call for, with the goal of getting an agreement back in place for January 1st, 2012. So there's a two-year period of having the baseline and a new study. And the new study would look at the number of residents of each state with earnings in the other state, income earned by residents in one state who work in the other state, the amount of tax revenue foregone or gained by each state if a reciprocity agreement were implemented in tax year 2012, and a calculation of compensation payable from the state that gains revenue. And the last comment I'll make, Madam Chair, and then I would invite you to hear from Commissioner Ines, is that this bill is moving in our body. This bill is moving in the Minnesota Senate. This bill is moving in the Wisconsin Assembly, and this bill is moving in the Wisconsin Senate. So it is a very good faith effort by both states to try and, again, take the pieces of reciprocity and put them back in place and move forward.
Commissioner, welcome.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ward Ines with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And Madam Chair, I don't know how much of the backstory you're interested in, but I do want to get on the record that as a tax administrator, it was not my first choice to dissolve an agreement that had been in place since 1967. But circumstances arose as such. I think there was really no other option if you took into account the best interests of Minnesota residents as a whole. And so maybe I don't want to back up real quick and just tell you how this whole issue came to a head. Back in July, we contacted the Wisconsin Department of Revenue, my counterparts in Wisconsin, and discussed with them expediting the payment. We weren't concerned with being under, we were still concerned, but we weren't going to address at that time being under reimbursed or the fact that we hadn't done a benchmark study since 1995. We just said, can you reimburse us in the same fiscal year in which we incur the loss? And by doing that alone, having a more expedited, more accelerated payment reimbursement, we would pick up $105 million for the state of Minnesota. One-time money, I'll bet, but it'd be $105 million infusion. We went back and forth, negotiated offers, counter-offers. They counter-offered $40 million acceleration of the payment. The governor's response is, how about if we split the difference between the 105, which is a full acceleration, and their first offer, $40 million, to arrive at 72.5, I think the number was. That counter-offer by the governor was rejected. And at that point, negotiations just didn't go anywhere, continued to spin our wheels, and we made the decision at that point to exercise our authority under 290.081 to terminate the agreement when it's not deemed in the best interest of Minnesota. So we weren't even going for the full $130 million that we feel we were being under-reimbursed, plus if you take the delay in payment into account. We were just asking for an acceleration of the payment, an acknowledgement that we shouldn't have to wait, you know, nearly 2 years in order to get reimbursed for our reciprocity payments. So that's kind of how it all played out. I think the final offer we made, saying let's just accelerate 70, you know, about 70% of the payments that's owed Minnesota, was a very fair offer, a very balanced offer. And it left to another day the issue of benchmark study and the under-reimbursement that appears on this revenue estimate. So that's kind of where we're at right now. And just in the interest of full disclosure about the numbers that taxpayers impacted, repeal of reciprocity, our estimates are that it impacts about 22,500 Minnesota taxpayers that work in Wisconsin. Of those 22,000, about 13,000 will be required to file dual returns because they'll hit the minimum threshold for filing requirements. And of that 13,000, about 8,000 will see a net tax increase due to higher taxes in Wisconsin. So we're really talking about a relatively small universe of people who will be inconvenienced because of filing dual returns, about 13,000, then another 8,000 that will see a tax increase attributable to higher income taxes in Wisconsin. And it's important to note, no Minnesota resident will pay more in Minnesota taxes due to repeal of reciprocity. And so now we sit here today after repeal. I met with counterparts in Wisconsin again. I met with some legislators. Representative Reinhart was very engaged in it, as was Senator Saltzman, in saying, okay, how do we go forward here? How do we restore reciprocity on terms that are equitable to both states? And so this study, as Representative Reinhart said, is the first step and a prerequisite to getting reciprocity back in place, and really a requirement. If we're going to go forward and really have an agreement that is in the best interest of Minnesota, we need to do the reciprocity study, the benchmark study, and then see if we can negotiate a reimbursement that we think accurately reflects the lost revenue for Minnesota. Okay, that's part of the backstory, Madam Chair, and how we got to where we are here today.
Is there anyone else who'd like to testify for or against this bill? Okay, and there are a number of questions. You know, I have a question either, you know, maybe for the commissioner, or maybe that's the fairer way here, maybe it's for Representative Reinhart, and, you know, I'll just say that, you know, Commissioner, I don't think you should feel apologetic at all. I think you should have gone after him sooner for all of it, because I just, for one, don't think we should be forgoing that money. And I was really, I do remember when the governor made that decision. I had some folks from the press come and talk to me, and I think they were looking for me to rip on the governor. And, you know, as you know, we've talked about this privately. I'm very supportive of what the Department of Revenue did, and you know, we're not in a situation to forgo money right now, but I do know that the legislators by the borders, like Representative Reinhart and Representative Davids and others, have
the one that ripped the governor.
Yeah, they have a different sort of set of issues, and we'll get into those. But I do want to sort of ask, I heard what you said, Representative Reinhart, that the Senate's doing something similar. And, you know, most states we don't have reciprocity with. And all kinds of filers are filing in multiple states, not just in Wisconsin. And I sent a note to Ms. Manzi, who informs me. I said, who else do we even have reciprocity with besides Wisconsin? And she said, Michigan and North Dakota. On the other hand, being married to someone who's had to file in multiple states, I mean, we don't have those relationships with those states. And it is a pain for filing in multiple states, but lots of taxpayers do it all over Minnesota all the time. So, you know, I understand people feel differently that somehow Wisconsin is special, but I guess I would ask, you know, first Mr. Michael, you know, I asked him to sort of take a guess via note where maybe the most people have a double state filing issue, and Mr. Michael, could you comment what you think that might be for Minnesotans?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in the New York metropolitan area, there is no New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut do not have reciprocity, and they're just an immensely large population that crosses the border from New Jersey into New York and vice versa, and Connecticut to New York. And so, and as someone who has filled out non-resident tax returns for New York and New York City, it is no fun thing to do.
Well, and we do want to go to questions, but I just want to ask you, Commissioner, just a little bit here. You know, I understand the long cultural relationship with Minnesota and Wisconsin, and I'm not trying to throw a wrench in this because I think most legislators are with Representative Reiner here, but this is just a convenience, and we have Minnesotans who file double taxes in every state in the nation, and, you know, I don't really think over the long haul it does that much for that many in Minnesota. I get why Wisconsin really benefits from this, and it seems to me, you know, the language should probably include, to me, some more time, you know, talking about the timeline more, if the goal is to return the money quicker, not just study the impact. But, you know, why not study the income tax reciprocity issues in all the states? Why just Wisconsin? I mean, what's the goal here in narrowing to that? And I understand where people live on the map, like Representative Reinert and Representative Davids. I get that they have a lot of constituents who this is a huge inconvenience for. But when we look at state policy now for everybody, we have people all over who are filing in multiple states. So, Commissioner, can you just talk a little about your thoughts on all of this?
Yeah, and Madam Chair, the other two states that we have reciprocity with, North Dakota and Michigan, they're very straightforward, simple agreements. There's no reimbursement like there is involved in Wisconsin. And much of the problem, almost all the problems associated with the Wisconsin reciprocity agreement were involving the reimbursement, the methodology, and not having an updated benchmark study. Those aren't concerns in North Dakota, Michigan. And the traffic isn't significant enough to make that a major issue. And so there isn't a reimbursement settle-up payment involving those two states. You know, and your staff, Madam Chair, can correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the general trend now is to really get away from reciprocity agreements. And that they're a little bit of an anachronism. You know, back in 1967, when this was signed, I think it was effective for tax year 1968, was the first year. You know, there wasn't e-filing, there wasn't the kind of electronic filing and tax status that we have today. So I think both me and my counterpart, when we were negotiating this thing, and we were doing our best to try to preserve it, we were both motivated. He has 50,000 taxpayers impacted. We have 22,500. And we were both motivated, but I think there was also the acknowledgement that we do live in a different time today. 1967 is a different time from a tax administration perspective than 2010. I don't think I would be supportive of expanding our reciprocity relationship with other states. I think what makes Wisconsin, Minnesota unique is that people who have crossed that border for the last 40-some years have operated under a regime where reciprocity was in place. So it's become a culture of reciprocity. I get that. I understand that. It's our job to make tax administration as easy as possible for taxpayers, as long as it makes economic sense for the state. And, you know, we focus initially on the timing of the payments, but if you just factor out that and just talk about the ongoing subsidy that Minnesota is paying to have reciprocity in place, the $17 million a year that's ongoing, and you divide that by a number of taxpayers in Minnesota that are given the convenience of filing only one return, right, 13,000. We're talking about an annual subsidy of over $1,300 per taxpayer.
Well, and Commissioner, I mean,
I don't think that can be justified on a cost.
That's kind of where I'm going here. I'm saying all or none. You could buy all those people a computer system so they can make sure that they can get their electronic filing done for less than bringing back reciprocity. That's why I've just been, you know, interested why the Department of Revenue might go down this road. I understand geographically why a lot of legislators who represent these people may go down that road, but I just wanted to hear the department's kind of take on all this and want to give Representative Reinert first, before questions, a chance to respond to all, what we've just been talking about here. Representative Reinert.
Well, Madam Chair, I mean, obviously my personal interest in this stems from that, but as we worked through this issue, you know, one of the things that became clear is we do have the two other reciprocity agreements, and you know, I don't disagree with you on the bigger reciprocity conversation, but within the three agreements that we have, Minnesota, Wisconsin, you know, far out distances, it's a few hundred people with Michigan, it's a few thousand with North Dakota, it's 80,000 between the two states with Minnesota and Wisconsin. The thing I would share with the committee and the chair is it's not only about the convenience of the taxpayers. I think that is important. You know, we have a very bad economy, and you know, this was a big change for a lot of tax filers in not the best tax year. But it's also a huge issue for small businesses. You know, and I will share with you, coming from the Twin Ports, where we've been working hard to erase lines between Superior and Wisconsin, especially for our small business owners who now are trying to figure out, well, what do I withhold and who do I withhold it for and who do I pay it from? You know, when you've got an accounting department and an HR department, not a problem. When you're a small business owner and it's you, it's been a major issue. I get questions all the time, and I have to, as Commissioner knows, he was very helpful in setting up a hotline because I'm no tax expert. But that's more of my motivation. I mean, we've managed to build one community, one economy in northeastern Minnesota between Superior, Wisconsin, and Duluth, Minnesota. And I know the same is true down in southeastern Minnesota. And, you know, I guess it's not quite as much of an issue in the Twin Cities. But for the regional centers, that's been the driving factor. And at the end of the day, it is a convenience issue. But that's where more of my motivation has been.
Thank you. So we've got Representative Solberg, Garofalo, Brott. Representative Solberg.
No, pass.
Representative Garofalo.
No.
Representative Brott.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Commissioner, what does the agreement actually say related to the timing for payback from Wisconsin to Minnesota or Minnesota to Wisconsin?
Madam Chair, Representative Brown, no, I don't have the exact language on the payment schedule, but it was an addendum to the original agreement. And it was an agreement payment schedule that went back, you know, 20 years or something. I don't have that. If you're interested in looking at that, I can give you the complete copy of the terminated agreement. And this has been the payment schedule hadn't been an issue that was raised by Minnesota in previous years so much. But what had been raised in an ongoing point of contention was the methodology and under reimbursement. And they'd never been able to resolve that issue. In fact, it went so far as the Senate at one point, when Senator Pogemiller was the chair, actually had termination of the agreement in one of the tax bills. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I think the conference committee compromise was they've started paying interest on the delayed in payments.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the compromise in order to mm-hmm. maintain the lag in the payment schedule, Representative. I wish I had a better answer for you. I don't have the language right in front of me about what it was.
Well, Senator, thank you. And Commissioner, what I was trying to get to is they were essentially, it sounds to me that they were almost in breach of the agreement or in breach of the contract. Is that fair or is that unfair?
Madam Chair, Representative Brott, I would not go so far as to breach. They took real exception. Wisconsin.
Go ahead, say it.
Because I never actually used the word breach, but they...
Oh, I apologize.
Technically, they were not in breach of the agreement.
Representative Brott.
And I'll just wait for the commissioner.
I don't know how they weren't technically in breach. Well, they weren't paying, but...
Yeah, well okay. I guess what I'm trying to get... Well, Madam Chair, you're getting to where I'm trying to get to, which was when we wouldn't have been talking about reciprocity if the agreement was being fulfilled, it would seem to me. And so my question then would be, whether it's breach or non-breach, I won't make a judgment on the use of the terminology, even though others may have made that judgment. My question then is... In the other two instances, we have three, right? In the other two instances of reciprocity, do we have the delayed payment issue? Do we have interest on delayed payments with those two other instances? Do we have what a reasonable individual might consider a breach?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Brott, there is no reimbursement payment that flows either way. I think that the acknowledgement has been that the traffic between the two states is relatively nominal. It's probably fairly equal, unlike the Wisconsin-Minnesota relationship. And so it's just a very straightforward, you file in the state of residency, and that's it. There's no settle-up payment, no reimbursement. So it's a very straightforward, and there's none of the issues that were implicated in the Wisconsin-Minnesota relationship were implicated in either one of those in either one of those agreements.
Okay. And Madam Chair,
Representative Brown.
And Madam Chair and Representative Reiner, I'm not critical of your legislation. I guess I'm somewhat critical of the idea that we would turn a blind eye to millions and millions of dollars of Minnesota taxpayer dollars. And I actually appreciate some of the moves of the administration to bring this issue to light. And I know they're not easy moves, and I know they're difficult both for taxpayers from an understanding standpoint, from an administration standpoint. But when people make agreements, they need to abide by those agreements. And if this presses us closer to, if we keep reciprocity, if this presses us closer to actually making sure that we have a better collaboration related to reciprocity, then we've all won in the end if we're going to keep reciprocity. If we're not going to keep reciprocity, that's a whole other discussion. I'd love to talk to the chair about that. But if we're going to have it, it's got to be something that both sides agree to and actually fulfill. My concern is that Wisconsin has not fulfilled their part of the deal.
Madam Chair, Representative Rod, I don't want to be in the position of defending Wisconsin. I'm a Vikings fan. But I think it is fair to say, as the commissioner was answering a question, I was looking through the materials we had from our meetings this past summer, and I think it's fair to say that Wisconsin's position would be that they were following the letter of the agreement. It called for a final payment providing settlement of any unpaid amounts to be made in December of the year following the tax year in which the taxes were collected under the current agreement. And they would also say, and this was a bone of contention for them, I think it was 20-some years into the agreement, when this delayed, when the amount started to become significant as populations grew in both states, that we started charging them interest on that delay. And our charging them interest in their agreement to pay it was actually a tidy little sum that we would get in interest on each of these payments was, agreement by both parties to this lag time issue. However, I would note that in these meetings we had, there were 30-some legislators, House and Senate, from both states, that as we got into this, and I think the commissioner hit it on the head, it's been culture for the border areas from 1967 on. It was just the way that you did business, or if you were an employee, the way that you did your taxes. And as we started to peel this onion back, there were certainly things that opened my eyes. The three big issues on the delay, on the interest we charge, and then this almost 30-year-old study that we were using to try and calculate who owed whom money were all sort of, wow. I mean, those are issues that we need to address. So I don't think that there was anybody from the Minnesota side saying we're okay with you owing us $100+ million and taking almost 2 years to do it. But the basic tenet of positioning Minnesota and Wisconsin as partners in an upper Midwest economy to the rest of the world was something that we didn't want to lose sight of.
And Madam Chair, I think Representative Reiner made a good point. I think if you look at the agreement that was entered into and amended over the years, they were in compliance with that agreement as far as the payment schedule. They clearly were in compliance. Our argument is that this was no longer acceptable to Minnesota. And I think when this legislation passed and the legislature had enough foresight to give Minnesota, the executive branch, Department of Revenue, some authority, if the situation did morph, it was no longer in the best interest of Minnesota, the authority to unilaterally back out of the agreement. The Wisconsin commissioner did not have that authority. And so it was a little problematic negotiating with them because we had more autonomy and more authority to negotiate changes in the agreement than they did. Everything had to be ratified by the legislature. So I may have made a tactical mistake during negotiations. I was mainly negotiating with the Department of Revenue, which has been the historical precedent, and always negotiating with their executive branch. It became clear to me that I should have had more conversations with the legislatures, and because they would have actually had to sign off on any agreement that was reached by their commissioner. So it was a very difficult negotiation because you had a guy, I'm negotiating with my counterpart, who really didn't have that much unilateral authority to amend the agreement. So it was a challenging negotiation, to say the least. And I think the legislature, even a little more in the backstory, after they saw the last offer that we put on the table, the governor put on the table, I think they had great remorse that their executive branch did not accept that offer. Because what cost them would have cost them $70 million in one-time payment is going to end up costing them $130 million in 1 year, plus $17 million ongoing. So I think they realized, they just quickly did the math and realized the offer we gave to them was one they should have surely accepted and kept reciprocity in place.
Okay, well, and I stand corrected. Okay, so they weren't in breach. They're in compliance. It was just taken forever to get into compliance, and it was legal to do so, right? For them to take forever. And so the state said, the governor, unacceptable, we don't support this policy anymore, and I support the governor on that. And I guess what I'm trying to question is, why bring it back? What's the gain for the state? But I think I'm more of a minority in that. But I do want to ask Mr. Michael, before we go to other questions, to help the committee think through, what is the burden, how does the tax incidence of this whole program land on Minnesotans? Because I think that's what we really need to know here is, you know, why we would even want to do this, and who picks up the cost of this? Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think in addition to the items that the Commissioner and Representative Reinert have talked about, it's useful for the committee to be aware of yet a fourth item, which is not really addressed in this legislation and is sort of left to negotiation between the two states, but is a point of contention, and I think the members of the committee may be able to relate to this philosophically. And that stems from the fact that basically what we're doing with reciprocity is we're saying for a Minnesota resident that you're just going to pay tax to Minnesota even though you work in Wisconsin and earn your income, some of your income in Wisconsin, and under a non-reciprocity state of affairs would pay tax in Wisconsin at Wisconsin rates and then get a credit for that against your Minnesota tax liability and to the Wisconsin residents vice versa. Well, the reality is that Wisconsin, for most taxpayers, has a higher tax than Minnesota. So when we have a reciprocity agreement, it not only has this effect of sort of saying you don't have to do dual filing, but for Minnesota residents, they're also getting, for a substantial chunk of the Minnesota residents, you're also getting a tax cut because you don't have to pay the higher tax that Wisconsin would impose on you. So that raises a philosophical point, which has been a point of contention in the negotiations between the two states. Minnesota has taken the position that, gee, that ought to be compensated by Wisconsin to Minnesota. Wisconsin naturally says, gee, you're letting your own residents off from paying our higher tax. Why should we compensate you for that? The language in the bill here really doesn't address that. It's a philosophical kind of thing that's going to have to be resolved when this, if there's an agreement that will be put in place. The Revenue Department has estimated, I think, of that $17 million the Commissioner talked about $3 million of it falls in that category. So reciprocity has had the effect for these folks that live, the Minnesota residents that live along the border and work in Wisconsin, in aggregate, are paying about $3 million less in total tax because of that. And which state should bear the cost of it? Should Minnesota bear the cost of that because, it's our residents? They're paying less tax that really would be owed to Wisconsin, or can we get Wisconsin to chip in for part of that because we've got leverage over them because they have a lot more residents over there that will get this convenience benefit?
Do you want to comment on that, Commissioner Innes, before we go?
Madam Chair, Mr. Michael was spot on. That's been a long going, and I'll call it a second tier issue, but it wasn't one we really addressed in the course of our negotiations, but it has been one where you basically have Minnesota subsidizing Minnesota residents for working in Wisconsin, which just seems a little bit, not quite right. And I think, in the aftermath of the termination of the agreement, Madam Chair, I know there were comments about this being a tax increase on Minnesotans. And I just want to clarify for the record, I mean, no Minnesotan will pay more in Minnesota taxes with the repeal of reciprocity than they did before. I mean, any tax increase is attributable to Wisconsin taxes. And it was never the intent of reciprocity to insulate you from the higher tax burdens of Wisconsin. It really was a convenience issue. But over time, as the tax burdens in Wisconsin and Minnesota have become more disparate, with Wisconsin having a higher burden, it has become a subsidy for those Minnesota residents who work in Wisconsin.
And I think that point's really important. And the press also tried to bait me to sort of say, isn't this the governor raising taxes on 8,000 Minnesotans? And the answer is no. This would be Wisconsin collecting their taxes. So I think this helps people understand what's really all in play here. Another border city legislator, Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that leads into what I wanted to say. There are other factors or reasons why reciprocity is important, not just the convenience to the taxpayer, but particularly, as we just discussed, when you have different tax rates. We happen to be in a situation where the North Dakota rate is lower than ours. If we didn't have reciprocity with North Dakota, that would be a major factor in people deciding to live on the North Dakota side because they work there, as opposed to living in Minnesota. And very frankly, if we didn't have reciprocity, we'd have more people moving out of our community, deciding to live in North Dakota as a result. And it's not just the convenience, but the other factors that are involved.
Wouldn't it follow then, Representative Lanning, that because North Dakota's lower and Wisconsin's higher, that if we didn't resume reciprocity, then more people would live in Minnesota? Isn't that right? I mean, isn't that how the argument would work on the Wisconsin side? I mean, because I hear you, and I think you've been vigilant about your relationship with North Dakota, as has Representative Marquardt, and I understand what you're saying there on when the state next to you has a lower tax rate, but Wisconsin's is higher. So I think this is an interesting set of policy choices is all I put out there. So,
well, Madam
Lanning?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I don't know if there's any way for us to get a handle on how many people are going to make a decision on where to live as a result of this issue, but I can tell you from the experience of talking to countless people over the years, you start taking away a reciprocity, that's going to be a factor in their decision where they're going to live. We have a hard enough time as it is to convince people to stay on the Minnesota side.
So Representative Davids, another legislator affected, but Representative Davids, maybe more people will move to your district if we get rid of reciprocity forever. What do you think, Representative Davids?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And to the point that the Commissioner made, he's correct when he says it does not raise taxes on Minnesotans on Minnesota income, but it does raise taxes on Minnesotans. I have a lot of people in La Crescent, Caledonia areas that are getting a pretty good sized tax increase right now, and they're not real happy with it. So, this program's been in effect since 1967, and of course I'm getting it, it worked fine, why don't you just leave it alone? Well, it was very interesting, the interviews I had with the press, and the question I was asked, well, if you were Governor Davids, I don't get concerned. I know that's a frightening thought. If you were Governor Davids, what would your position be? My position would have been to do exactly what the governor did, because for the statewide issue, right. In all fairness, it was the right decision. But I don't represent the entire state of Minnesota. I represent Houston and Fillmore counties, where it has a negative impact. So certainly I was not pleased with the decision at all, but I do understand the decision, and I think we need to go forward with Representative Reinert's bill here to see what can be accomplished on this issue, because it's a tax increase on Minnesotans, not on Minnesota income. I mean, the statement's correct here, right. But you have to go to the next statement. Are Minnesotans having a tax increase? Yes, they do, because in Houston County, we have the largest number of Minnesota residents working in Wisconsin than any other county, including St. Louis counties, mm-hmm. the metro counties, because our regional center is on the other side of the river in La Crosse, where all the many Houston County folks go to work. So I'm concerned about this issue, and I hope we can support the Reinert bill.
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just had one quick question just related to something that Representative Reinert said, because I think is really interesting, and I'd love a number around it. It related to how much of this, the people, I guess the filers, are business filers or personal, or whether it's personal income or business income. I'm curious the breakdown between individuals and businesses.
Representative Reinert or Commissioner or Ms. Vanzi or anybody think they know?
Yeah, Commissioner. Madam Chair, I think I'm ill-equipped to answer that question. I do know the head count as far as people who live in one state and work in the other state. I think it's about $50,000 for Wisconsin residents who work in Minnesota, and as I said before, about 22,500 Minnesotans who work in Wisconsin. But I don't have breakdown beyond that. But I, If you're interested, I can ask Dr. Wilson. He does have something like that. We've done a lot of research during the course of negotiations. A lot of numbers flew back and forth. So we may have something along those lines.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, if you have it, great. If you don't, I don't think it'll change the outcome of this piece of legislation. But if you do have it, I would be interested just to understand the flow of business and income across borders.
And Madam Chair, somewhat to Representative Broad's question, I mean, Representative Reinhart said that probably the biggest issue we've had is businesses who have, for 40, 50 years, been operating under a regime where they didn't have to worry about, you know, how to allocate income across these borders and everything, now have to run a whole new system. And though it's the norm for most taxpayers, it's not the norm for those who operate across that border. So I totally empathize with the business owners, especially the small and medium-sized businesses, who may not have the level of, you know, software, sophistication, have not been used to this. So we've done our best to try to have a helpline, hotline, frequently asked questions on our website to try to walk people through, because this is somewhat of a sea change for people who have operated with reciprocity in place for 45 years.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to maybe clarify something with Representative Broad's question. Maybe I'm missing something here, Representative Broad, but I'm not understanding how it would affect business income at all. I mean, I understand what you're talking about the small businesses who have to calculate this for their employees and do withholding. How would this affect business income earned? I don't understand that. I thought this was just income taxes for people who are working one side or the other.
Thank you, and Representative Liebling. I was just intrigued by a comment that Representative Reinert had made related to businesses. And so what I was trying to understand is, you know, how many of these people who are affected are businesses and how many are individuals, just so I can get a better sense of who's struggling to figure out how to deal with this new reality. So it was just really off of Representative Reinert's statement.
Yeah, and then Madam Chair.
Yes, please, Representative Liebling.
Thank you. If I could just follow up on something that was being discussed before about people moving to North Dakota, and, you know, I just wanted to remind people that there's another issue besides tax rates, and that is services. You know, people may actually want to live in this state because of our services that might be better than North Dakota. So I just really, you know, such as schools and other things. So I just wanted to inject that.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Davids, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just on a comment here, like I said, when I was Governor Davids, I was all for what the governor did. When I was State Representative Davids, I was all against it. That's just, you know, the way it goes. But I don't think we'll lose folks moving over to Wisconsin for this, because their property taxes are much higher, and they already get their Wisconsin plates and live in Minnesota anyway, so we should be good.
I thought they were all visitors.
Other questions? Closing comments, Representative Reinert?
Madam Chair, I appreciate the committee's consideration of this. And again, I've got a map that's coming as I was looking through my files. I think members will find it interesting. As you follow the border down, and this comes to a point that Representative Davids made, you'll see that we are net importers of workers, beginning in Douglas County, Wisconsin, all the way down until you hit La Crosse. And then you finally have two counties in Minnesota that are where we're next net exporters of workers. You know, and so to kind of tie this back full circle, yes, I'm concerned about the convenience of my local taxpayers, but more importantly, I'm concerned about regional meshing of economies in Duluth and Superior, and especially northeastern and southeastern Minnesota. It's not as much of an issue in the Twin Cities, where you have a huge economy and the suburban and exurban areas. But in the Twin Ports and in southeastern Minnesota, making these regions seamless, where you have businesses that move back and forth across the border in terms of their services and branch offices, and you have people that may one day have a job in Duluth, may have lost that, may pick up a job in Superior the next day. This is more than a convenience. It's a selling point for those regional economies.
Okay, thank you. Representative Brown.
I just had a question for Representative Reinert. This gives the border battle a whole new relationship. I'm wondering, do you get a jug, or do you get a statue, or what do you get when you win?
Well, you know, Madam Chair, Representative Broad, the smelt fry is coming up this weekend, so I'm good.
I'm good.
Okay, we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill, and we need a motion for the April 13th minutes.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Davids moves the minutes of April 13th. Discussion, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Thank you, members. We're adjourned.